Everybody's talking at me.
CRN Digital Talk Radio, Chuck Wilder here, Swayed at the Network, and we're live across America and around the world at crntalk.com. In just a moment, the world-famous Mike Ouellette, CEO and founder of InvestUSA, coming up. Judd Garrett, he's going to be here with his latest, what is the title of that one? Let me see here. Quantitative Squeezing, yes. And then Selwyn Duke, writer for The New American, with all of his latest. So there you go. Hey, right now, let me tell you something. When you think about it, is Senator Rand Paul's decree to have Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg put in jail really such an absurd idea? Well, law enforcement veteran Michael Letts believes that the senator may be onto something when it comes to justice. Just days ago, former President Donald Trump noted that Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg would be issuing an arrest warrant for him this week. Though that has not yet taken place, some believe it could literally happen at any time. And that said, Senator Rand Paul sounded off with his own opinion on the matter. In a tweet, Paul noted, quote, "A Trump indictment would be a disgusting abuse of power. The DA should be put in jail." Though Paul didn't provide any further context regarding his tweet, it's become the subject of heavy criticism. However, there are some, including law enforcement veteran Michael Letts, who believes that he may be onto something, especially considering how President Biden's own son, Hunter, has yet to face any charges surrounding what happened with his laptop months prior. Letts joins us now to discuss his perspective further and why the police officers that are given the arrest order may want to think twice. Welcome back, Michael. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Chuck. Always a privilege to be on your show. And, yes, this is one of many issues. It is. They're coming faster than we can swat at them, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, in the face of so many people believing that he's in the wrong, why do you believe that Senator Paul has a point when it comes to arresting D.A. Alvin Bragg?
Well, Senator Paul and I had talked. This is the night before we issued that press release. I knew what was coming the next day, and that they has 600 pages of exculpatory evidence that he withheld from the grand jury. That's actually prosecutorial misconduct. That's obstruction of justice. You want to talk about holding people accountable. You cannot be a prosecutor and do that with any kind of a conscience at all. That proves you have one goal in mind, and that is you have a vendetta to put somebody away. You don't care about the facts. And Chuck, yeah, you can never be in a position of authority and do that. It's just morally reprehensible to do that to anybody. And he has proven that. He has done that, which is why the grand jury now has suddenly slammed on the brakes, and they're backpedaling quickly. The possibility of an indictment is probably becoming smaller and smaller and smaller, but there should be an indictment, but it should be the opposite way now. He needs to be held accountable for allowing his George Soros. You remember he received over $1 million for his campaign from George Soros.
Yep.
Part of that $1 million was that he has taking the majority of felonies, get this, majority of felonies that come to his, he has downgraded to misdemeanors. Those felonies that he has tried, the vast majority of them, he has been unsuccessful and had thrown out. Probably one of the worst prosecutors in this country. And yet he decides to take a case that is a misdemeanor that has no jurisdiction because it's a federal campaign issue, not a state issue, try to make it into a state issue and try to make it into a felony. And then to do that, he withholds 600 pages of emails and documentation of exculpatory evidence. That's just, I can't think of anything any worse. And quite frankly, you know, that he needs to be held accountable. He needs to feel the weight of justice. You know, they keep saying, Chuck, you know, equal justice. You know, if you're the president or if you're the janitor, it should be the same. Okay, and put your money where your mouth is.
Yep, equal justice under the law. You know, you've talked in the past how Trump has become a target of Biden and his administration, as well as his Democratic allies. Would you say that this appears to be the case here as well when it comes to the potential actions of Bragg?
There's no question about it, Chuck. In fact, it was funny. We issued that press release that night, and the next morning, early in the morning, we talked to Representative Cromer, Jim, because, you know, the president had just come out that morning and told reporters that it was falsehood that he'd ever received any money from China. Yet the bank records don't lie. And so it was important that we issued another press release that, because you remember, you're talking about the president, the commander-in-chief, and if he thinks that he can lie and get away with it just because he says so, then there is no justice system in this country. And so we are demanding that he retract that lie and misstatement, and that he own up to the facts, whatever the records show. Now, how he wants to explain it, that's up to him. But to simply say that he never received money when the banking records indicate very clearly, it's not even ambiguous, otherwise millions of dollars. You cannot have a two-tier justice system, which is what you're seeing on a rapid system being put into place. It's all benefiting China, and the reason why it's doing that is because China has direct inroads with this administration.
Yeah, but you know, you mentioned the tier system. You also have the double standard there when it comes to them. You've also mentioned how what Trump did surrounding the payoff with former porn star Stormy Daniels, isn't that what you consider illegal? And why would Bragg say otherwise? Simply for any reason to arrest Trump, maybe?
For any reason, because in here is what was in the exculpatory evidence, is that there is sworn testimony from Michael Cohen, who, remember, Michael Cohen has been convicted of lying to Congress, to lying to prosecutors, I mean, repeatedly. But we have sworn testimony that he says that he paid Stormy Daniels, never any evidence of an affair. He just paid it because he thought it would that Trump would eventually pay him back, and it would look good for him to have averted a potential crisis. Trump knew nothing about it, did not sign anything authorizing such. And then from the fact of the matter is that when Michael Cohen did that, then he turns around and says, oh, I changed my mind. The president told me to do that. That kind of a witness is the worst kind you could ever have.
Yeah, what kind of argument would you have for someone that thinks that Rand is way off base, maybe, with his suggestion?
Well, and here's what I would tell you, because I've had calls on this matter, is regardless of what you think of Rand, regardless of what you think of Trump, regardless of what you think of me, look at the facts. Is there exculpatory evidence or not? And was it withheld? And the answer to that is clearly yes. You can't argue those facts. So regardless of what you think of the personality, just deal with the facts. That's all we're asking. That's all America wants. Give me the facts, and I can make the decision myself. But when you withhold facts, alter facts, lie about facts, and for your own benefit, that's when we become an issue, whether it's the Joe Biden, whether it's Prosecutor Alvin Bragg, whoever it is, or whether it were Trump, if he had done that, I would take the same position. And it's when you don't have the ability to defend yourself is when you attack the people instead. When you know you see them attacking the people instead of the facts, you know something's wrong.
Right. So do you believe Bragg may have changed course of the potential arrest because Trump spoke up over the weekend, or perhaps there's another reason?
No, I think that his mindset, and it wasn't just Bragg. Bragg's not that smart. I'll go on the record saying that. There are a lot of people pulling his strings, deep state operatives, Soros and others. But I think when they found out the extent to which he thought he could go to by withholding evidence, and now that's come out, he knows his goose is cooked, and they're backing off quickly because it makes him look the fools that they really are and how that they are will stop at nothing, including lies, deception to the American people to garnish their liberal idealistic point of view. And it's just detrimental to this country because we have continually said on your show, Chuck, if you allow a two-tier justice system to exist and to stand, you'd have justice. You don't have justice at all. Right. And without justice, we don't have a country.
Well, Michael, you've also said in a previous press statement that you don't believe police officers should follow through on an arrest order despite potential penalties. Why do you think this is the right move to make?
Well, what I had said, and you're exactly right, Chuck, is there is no obligation for any law enforcement officer to move on an unlawful, what we call an unlawful order. Clearly, you have an unlawful order when you're ordering the arrest of someone who there not only is there not evidence, but the evidence actually shows the opposite. And we're talking today about the Bridges case, but I want to make it clear on to your listeners across the country, I don't care whether it's in D.C., whether it's in California, or whether it's in Atlanta. any kind member of the court, which would be the prosecutor, does not do their duty and decides to play politics instead, those are unlawful orders and they should be vigorously opposed. You should never put law enforcement in the middle of trying to enforce an unlawful order, because when it happens, the truth will eventually come out. And then we're the ones that made to be looked at, because we're the ones that executed that order. And then that causes additional heartache, death, and frustration for law enforcement officers all across the country.
And do you think this arrest could make police officers even more of a target to the public? Say,
I think it already has.
Yeah.
I think it already has.
Yeah, defund the police thing going on last year. Yeah, go ahead.
No question. I mean, it already has. And why is that? Because now you have two segments in this country, those that believe the lies, do whatever you need to get this. We don't like Trump, get rid of him. And if your law enforcement doesn't go along with it, we can't stand you either. And then you have the other set now that says you should know better. You should have values and principles. When you see an unlawful order, don't you dare execute it, or we don't think very much of you either. So you put that law enforcement community between a rock and a hard place. Totally unjustified in doing so. And hard enough job that we have now in terms of defund the police, the brutality that they're giving to officers, the murder rate that they're killing officers, the suicide rate, the defunding and removing of equipment. It's tough to be a cop nowadays. Then they want to add this on top of it? That is unconscionable, Chuck. It just literally is unconscionable.
All right. Well, listen, you're the creator of Invest USA, an organization that provides bulletproof vests to the police officers through various charitable groups and sponsorships. I want you to tell me more about that in the short time that we have, and why support for fellow officers is so important right now.
Let me give you a quick illustration. This is occurring in California now. A couple of days ago, the malls in San Francisco, groups of teens are roaming, attacking shoppers for no reason. Assaults are up. Violent crime is up. We are living in a society that is quickly degenerating into chaos. The only way to prevent that is a thin blue line, which quite frankly has to be supplemented now with the courage of the American citizen to stand behind them. That's why Invest is there. Make sure that you show our law enforcement that you back them, you have their back like they have yours. And together, if we don't unite, save this country, we won't have a country to save. And so that's why I'm begging, and I just urge you now, I'm begging for the American people. Take the last chance. This is Custer's last stand. Take the chance that you have to save this country now. You'll never get another chance again.
Yeah, it's, they go along with the crowd and they think, well, boy, I'm really part of something, aren't I? But they don't realize sometimes what's all involved and the circumstances. All right.
You're right. They're part of something.
Yeah. Where can we learn more about Invest USA and how those interested can help their fellow officers?
They'll go to www.investusa.org. It's a charity.org. It's a list of things they can do. Make sure you tell an officer today, thank you for your willingness to sacrifice for our safety. We have your back the same as you have ours. If you can contribute, do so. But most importantly of all, make sure you're armed and you're prepared to help defend your family and your community from the onslaught of what's coming ahead if we don't do something about it now.
All right. And it's Invest, I-N-V-E-S-T, USA, .org. And you can also check them out on their Twitter account. So,
that's
hey,
good.
Michael, thank you very much, sir. Look forward to our next visit. Michael
thank you,
Letts.
Sir.
Michael Letts, boy, on duty always. CEO and founder of Invest USA, investusa.org. Judd Garrett is coming up next.
Think of the many sacrifices it took to establish and to preserve liberty in the United States. Think of the many generations that went before us, that spilled blood to preserve that liberty, our freedoms. And look at how long it took, not very long, for us to lose many of those liberties. One flu season, together with lockdowns galore, and so many of those liberties just slipping away. In the United States today, we see an American government that is weakening abroad, even as it oppresses its people at home. We discuss this and so much more on our program, The Trumpet Daily. We're live weekday mornings at 11 a.m. Central Time in the United States. You can listen at CRN Digital Radio, Channel 3, or watch the live video stream at our website, thetrumpet.com.
Now you can get generic Viagra shipped to your door for about $2 a pill. Get the same impact for less. Call Steel Man Pills now and get the same blue pill for about $2 a pill. Call now for the 50-pill special and save even more. Plus, get a free bonus.
800-605-1683. 800-605-1683. 800-605-1683. That's 800-605-1683.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. That's 800-378-3212.
Trying to sell your old car? Instead, donate your vehicle to Heritage for the Blind. Pickup is free and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-785-9618. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats, whether they run or not. Call right now and receive a free gift. Call 1-800-785-9618. Donate your car today. That's 1-800-785-9618.
Everybody's talking at me.
Chuck Wilder, CRN. Hey, program note, when we meet next week, let me give you my guess there, okay? Reese Lloyd, author of the Flag Amendment, is going to be here, and he's talking about an important week because actually next week, March 29, is Welcome Home Vietnam Vets Anniversary, and then March 31st is Cesar Chavez Day. And what a guy he was. A lot of people get him kind of confused, like his alternatives and things like that. And then, of course, Frank Sabato, Underground USA podcast with all of his latest. Right now, I want to go to the one and only Mr. Judd Garrett. After 6 years as a professional football player, including with the 1993 Super Bowl champion Dallas Cowboys, he then began a 12-year coaching career with the Saints, the Dolphins, the Rams, and the Cowboys, and served another 12 years as a personal executive with the Cowboys. Judd has written two screenplays, frequent contributor on the topics of sports and politics to Real Clear Politics, and No Wind is his first published novel. Judd is married, father of six children, and his blog is Objectivity is the Objective. .com. Hey, Judd, welcome back. How are you?
How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Quantitative squeezing is the title of this one. Just imagine if you rolled your 401k into an IRA and the advisor you hired to manage your money invested it instead into the exact opposite investments that he said he would when he was lobbying for the job. What do you do, Judd? Take it away. I mean, how would you run into a person like that?
Yeah, I mean, if you entrusted your money with an investment advisor and he invested in the exact opposite the way he said he was going to, and then he drove you into debt and lost all your money, and then turns around and says, because your finances are so bad, I should be the one who controls your finances. And that's pretty much what our government is doing to us. If you look at the way they've handled the nation's finances, you know, over the recent years. I mean, we have $31.4 trillion worth of debt. You know, we have inflation, so high that that prices are going up all the time. Gas prices are so high. All this is done by what the government has done. And now, you know, Joe Biden's talking about this central bank digital currency, which will give the government the ability to control everybody's finances. So the one entity which has proven time and again that they don't know how to handle finances because they failed on such a large scale, they want to control your and my finances.
You know what surprised me, Judd, on this was the fact that Joe Biden does this with an executive order. There should be a law, you know, that presidents can't mess around with any kind of money using executive orders, because I just don't recall. I guess maybe they did it a long time ago when they had to, you know, in the Al Capone days maybe or something. But it seems kind of strange to me using an executive order to develop the CBDC. I wonder if he was really trying to do ABCD. You know what I'm saying?
So, but you know, really those executive orders were never designed to pass legislation or anything like that. They're more for
emergencies.
Either emergency or something that was merely ceremonial, like, you know, I have an executive order making, you know, Thanksgiving a holiday or something like that. It was,
yeah,
it was more for ceremonial things, not for actual legislative, agenda items.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like, we're going to extend daylight savings time. Aren't you happy? Oh, yeah. But anyway, the entity you say that caused the hyperinflation that we have lived through for the last 2 years and created the banking crisis that we are facing right now wants even more control over our monetary and financial systems. I think communism, maybe that would make them happy. I don't know. Boy, it's things are going, seems like there's everything is flying from every corner, 360 degrees right now into this president.
Well, I think that's what they're aiming for. I mean, you bring up communism, but that's the ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal is to disrupt our system so greatly that the government feels like they should step in and take control over everything. So, and I think that's what they're doing, because, as I said in that next sentence, you know, the chief economist from Moody's, you know, Mark Zandi, he said, you know, the rate hikes that the Federal Reserve has been enacting over the last year, you know, are going to, he said, things are going to start to wobble and break, and it's going to feel very uncomfortable, you know. And then after, he said,
okay,
that
hold
Tuesday,
that thought right there, and then we'll get to, what is it? The Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell had something to say, too, on this. Oh, the one and only Judd Garrett will continue in just a moment.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin have been working together successfully for more than 40 years. And in their latest dark comedy, they play aging college classmates who meet at the funeral of another best friend, with Fonda determined to get revenge on the grieving widower for an ancient wrong. That's the intriguing setup of Moving On, now playing in select theaters.
Howard, I'm going to kill you.
What's the plan, Scarface?
Do you have any poison?
I have a cyanide pill. In case I'm captured by the enemy, you can have it.
That enemy is played by another veteran, Malcolm McDowell, who is effectively dislikable. And the other characters are surprisingly complex and convincing, despite their sometimes silly, murderous intentions. The movie's conclusion is a groan-inducing cop-out, but for most of its running time, Moving On moves along at a well-paced and stylish clip. Rated R for mostly sexual details discussed rather than shown. 2.5 stars for Moving On.
When you really want Italian food, you have got to get to Columbo's. Columbo's Italian Steakhouse and Jazz Club. Colorado Boulevard, Eagle Rock. It's that little neighborhood place you wish was down the street from you. Today, it seems so hard to enjoy just a little bit of easy. So much of life seems to get in the way. But fear not, seekers of fabulous food and fun and thrill, Columbo's is Southern California's answer to Easy Street. Great grub. with some of the finest steaks, the freshest fish awaiting for you to devour. Did I mention Columbo's Family Italian Recipes? Columbo's Spaghetti Bolognese, their chicken pesto ravioli, Magnifico, and of course, the world's greatest meatballs. I can go on. But why go on when you can go on over to Columbo's and experience delicious and easy for yourself? Columbo's, of course, that little neighborhood place you wish was down the street from you. Columbo's, mind you been.
For the getaway of your dreams, come to Hawaii's Playground, Ka'anapali Beach Resort, on the fun side of Maui, where the world comes to play. Find your spot on Ka'anapali Beach with 3 miles of white sand, 12 resort properties, 2 golf courses, and 2 shopping centers. Enjoy the playground of Hawaii's ancient royalty. Ka'anapali Beach Resort is Hawaii's original master planned destination resort and home of the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival. With views of 2 neighboring islands, you can breathe in the land's natural beauty from your favorite resort or golf fairway. Come experience Ka'anapali's own special brand of Hawaiian hospitality with world-class dining, relaxing resorts, water sports, and activities of every kind. For romantic, family, and great friend getaways, discover the options of Ka'anapali Beach Resort, where the world comes to play. Plan your getaway today. Visit ka'anapaliresort.com. That's K-A-A-N-A-P-A-L-I-Resort.com.
The smartest way for you to get the lowest prices on your plane tickets, domestic or international, is to call SmartFares, first or last, but you've got to call us before you book your plane tickets. Fly anywhere in the world, fly anywhere in the U.S., and SmartFares can save you up to 75% on your plane tickets. We have the lowest airline ticket prices on over 500 airlines, and you've got a great 12-hour free cancellation window. Plus, with our live agent help, you can always get fast help and fast answers. So on your next trip, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, how about right now? Pick up your phone and call SmartFares. Plus, save up to 75% on your plane reservation. So call right now. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644.
Everybody's talking at me. CRN, Chuck Wilder with my guest Judd Garrett, author of No Wind. And by the way, his website, please remember this, because I'm going to tell you, every time he puts one of these out, one of these great reports, they are great. That's the short version of it. Objectivityistheobjective.com. Objectivityistheobjective.com. So we turn now to Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. I think you mentioned his name. And it's kind of strange. Is he getting up there in the 80s or 90s, you think, right now? He's been around for a long time.
Yeah, he's been around. You know, but it's interesting. On Tuesday, Moody's, you know, they downgraded the banking system. They said, you know, the problems as a result of rate hikes. And then the very next day, Powell increased interest rates by 0.25%. So he's not even listening to what, you know, place like Moody's is saying about our economy. He's just going full force, and that prompted Elizabeth Warren to say that he should be removed from his job because he's trying to drive our economy into a recession, which I think he's doing.
Yeah, was she using smoke signals when she sent that message? Just curious, yeah. What'd she say? Powell is a dangerous man to have in this job. Yeah, which may be true, but you know what? I think there's a lot of Congress critters that are shouldn't have that job. What was it? They voted to pass the unnecessary, massive, wasteful spending bills, and that was in 2021-22. $1.9 trillion for the American Rescue Plan. Boy, doesn't that... It's almost like I'm trying to think of the word, double gender or something like that, where you talk about, we're going to use a rescue plan, it's only going to cost us $1.9 trillion. It doesn't sound like it's a rescue plan. It sounds like a waterfall.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, Elizabeth Warren saying that Powell should be removed from his job because he's trying to drive the country into recession, but she's the one and her Democrat colleagues who passed all these spending bills, which drove up inflation to over 9%, and that's why Powell is doing what he's doing. So her fingerprints are all over the problems we're having in the financial markets right now. It's not just Powell. I mean, the extra $4 trillion of spending that we didn't need is the reason why inflation is through the roof.
$1.9 trillion, you know, $1.2 trillion. And then you get to the next page, $739 billion Inflation Reductions Act of 2022. I don't know how they can afford to keep, the Ukraine up.
Well, that's the funny thing is that they spent $739 billion on a, quote, Inflation Reduction Act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason why we have such high inflation is because of all the spending. So they spent even more money claiming that it's going to reduce inflation when it does the exact opposite. So this is where the Democrats are, and that's how much they respect the intelligence of the average American citizen, because they believe that they can get away with this when it's completely contrary to what makes sense.
You know, Judd, you're the father of six children, okay? And I'm going to get a little personal here. I don't know if you've ever, like, slapped their hand. You know, I know that whenever I was a young kid, that was a thing. You know, I also got spankings, all right? And I also got them in school. See, that's how far back I go. But, you know, it's like, do you think these guys that are giving away all our money and always coming up with these stupid plans that maybe we ought to start slapping their hands or something? Because it's like they get out of control and nobody can stop them. You know, it's a snowball going down the hill or something. You say they are blaming the banks when the primary driver of the banking crisis is the government. The banks, I guess, you know, they're very, what's the word, on a tightrope. You know, I know they're monitored very closely, right? Most of them are. So how can, go ahead.
Yeah, the problem is, and the banks probably should have anticipated it when Biden was put in office and what was going on during COVID. But what happened was the Fed had driven down interest rates so low that the only way you're going to get any type of return by safe investments in bonds and treasuries if you go out long, like a 10-year bond or 10-year treasury. That was the only thing that was given any type of return. And when the Fed increases interest rates, all those long-term bonds they lose their value, because now you can get short-term bonds that are outperforming the long-term bonds. This makes sense. It's called an inverted yield curve. And that crushed a lot of the banks, because when they have a lot of their money allocated in these 10-year bonds that are returning 2%, and now you can get a six-month bond worth 4%, all that money is completely devalued. And that's what's killing a lot of these banks right now. And it's all the doing of the Fed, because the Fed drove down the interest rates to nothing to begin with. And now they're raising them at a higher rate than they've ever done in the past. And these banks are just getting killed by it. So it's not solely the bank's fault. The Fed has a lot to do with what's going on.
Yeah. And the Democrats, and Biden especially, or whoever's pulling his strings, and I'll tell you, listener, this like four lines or so really tells you, if you wonder, why is it this way? And like Judd Garrett says, they never considered the negative consequences of deficit spending, raising taxes, sending $120 billion to the Ukraine, open borders, shutting down the Keystone XL pipeline, outlawing drilling on federal land, defunding the police, and who knows, because, you know, it's the end of the week and they're probably getting ready to come up with a whole bunch of new stuff on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way the Democrats operate when they're running the government. They only see the positives of their decision. They never factor in the negative. So, yeah, the $4 trillion of spending in Biden's first year and a half, there were some positive things that came out of it. But the negative things was all the extra money we had to print in order to pay for all of it. which created the inflation, which caused the interest rates to go high, which is causing the banks to fail. They never look two, three, four places down the road from their actions. They only see the short-term gain that they're going to get, and it happens all the time. It's defunding the police. That happened back in 2020 and 2021. All these Democrat cities defunded the police, thinking they're doing some great things, and then what happens a year later? Well, yeah. Murder rates have doubled. Armed robberies have doubled, so the crime's all, you know, out of control because they defunded the police. So they never see the long-term consequences of their decisions.
You know, I brag about your writing all the time, Judd, on the air, off the air. I write on fences. Judd Garrett, read him. No. Anyway, objectivity is theobjective.com. And I was just thinking, perfect title for, you know, I couldn't write it, but I could come up with a title that would really, to me, make sense. And when it comes to the Democrat, you know, never let a crisis go to waste and blame others for what you do. That seems to be working for them, and it's been working for them for a long time.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly their strategy. That's the perfect way to sum it up. They never let the crisis go to waste. They're always going to exploit it. They're never going to do what's best for the country. They're going to exploit the crisis, what's best for them, and then when all the negative consequences occur, they'll blame yeah. Trump, they'll blame the right. Republicans, they'll make up, white supremacy or whatever they want, and they always blame someone else. I mean, you're absolutely right on that.
And especially right now, I mean, it's as clear as the day, you know, unless maybe you're in Los Angeles, you know, and it's smoggy or something. But anyway, you know, everything that they're blaming on Trump, everything he's done, I mean, you can just start out with the sexual thing, you know. What do you think Bill Clinton and so many other people did? But they get away with it. Blame others for what you do, and it's like, is that the way Americans are? They have such a short memory that they can't remember their party might have been the first one that did this? It's ridiculous, you know. Back to your thing. Go ahead.
I was going to say, they're trying to get Trump right now in New York for the whole Stormy Daniels payoff.
Yeah.
But didn't Bill Clinton pay Paula Jones $750,000
right.
to settle the sexual harassment lawsuit? You know, why is that not, you know, an issue? Why isn't he being thrown in jail for that?
You said the last name was Clinton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it right there. It's the Clinton law,
yeah.
You know. Yeah. That's the way how they spell clear. It's just C-O, you know, the short version. And look at everything they get away with. I mean, it's blame others for what you do. Yes, it kind of makes you want to give up sometimes, you know, on America and the way it's being run. But then I guess it's better than any other country till further notice anyway. You say politicians are doing what they always do. They double down on the policies that create the problem. At the height of inflation crisis 2022, which was caused by massive government overspending, and then the Biden and the Democrats passed that, Inflation Reduction Act. How much was that, you say? $739 billion? Just a little toss in the bucket there, right? $739 billion. Wow.
Yeah, so they're using more deficit spending to solve the problems created by deficit spending. So I mean, it doesn't make sense anymore what they're doing, you know. And you know, that's what they always do, is instead of looking at the decisions they made and see where they went wrong and making changes, they just continue to do what caused all the problems in the first place.
Well, and with all that money, you know, it seems like you shouldn't have that many problems, you know, because I was thinking about San Francisco, for example, all right, $50 million to each black person in San Francisco for reparations for a city that never had any slaves, you know what I mean? But $50 million, that's a drop in the bucket unless you're an average American citizen. And $50 million is like you just hit the mother load, you know? But they've gone from, you know, from the millions to billions to trillions. And somehow it's, and they worry about, you know, people not working, you know, in restaurants and stuff like that. Help wanted, help wanted, help wanted. But look at where all this money is going and how they just, I don't know what it is. It's like they don't really realize the value of money, I guess. Is that it, Judd? Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, they definitely realize the value of money. And obviously, you know, what's happened with the Democrats, because they have a complicit media, which protects them and never calls them out. I mean, all you have to do is look at the, you know, press briefings, you know, at the White House, and no one challenges Green Jean-Pierre. So they're able to get away with anything. They're so empowered to get away with anything that they're going to spend all this money, and no one in the mainstream media, no one in the New York Times or Washington Post or CNN are going to call them out for their ridiculous, wasteful spending. I mean, Trump couldn't even get like $15 million to build the wall, and he was called the most wasteful spender in history. And these guys are spending $4 trillion at a drop of a hat, and no one's saying a word because the complicit media lets them get away with it.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Sometimes it's just, I think people just want to do what's the word I'm looking for? Not a blind eye. Maybe that's part of it. But, you know, they want to put their fingers in their ears, you know, and do the na, 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 I don't hear you, I don't hear you. Because I know people that say, listen, it's not my fault that all of this is happening, you know. I vote for the people that are supposed to be taking care of me. Well, that's not the, they don't seem to understand that you're voting for them and they're working so hard to get reelected because they want to get back in there and start trying to raise money for their next election. You know, that's the number one thing on their mind. I think number two, some of them might say, you know, what can I do for America? But number one is the money to get reelected. I believe that it, I've had a few Congress people actually confess to that to me. Not on the air, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of the spending was. You know, the Democrats took back power in 2021, and they had to pay back all of their political donors first and foremost. Mm-hmm. So they had to pass these massive spending bills that didn't benefit the average American. It didn't even benefit America. It put money into the pockets of the people who donated millions to get them elected. I mean,
yeah,
if you're a billionaire and you donate millions of dollars to get a Democrat elected, you want a return on that investment. You're not doing that out of the goodness of your heart. So
here's one that I think a lot of the listeners will get to. Try to figure this out. How much did 2,000 mules cost the Democrat in the last election? Because I didn't think mules were that expensive, but apparently they are. That's pretty clever. I know. It goes over a lot of heads, but, you know, that's the mules were the guys that kept going back and forth and dropping off all the boats in the buckets, okay? Yeah, that's what it was. Hey, we'll take a break, and I'll kind of save Judd here. Judd Garrett, by the way, you can get a copy of his book at Amazon. It's entitled No Wind, and it's fiction. It's not about what we're talking about, but it's a fiction book. No Wind, W-I-N-D. Amazon.com. Read all of his great subjects at objectivityistheobjective.com. What? Objectivityistheobjective.com. We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. Fred Dreyer here for Balance7.com. Do you suffer from low energy, acid reflux, heartburn, joint discomfort, or a weak immune system? Well, Balance 7 is your answer. Balance 7 dilutes the acid in your body and kickstarts your immune system. That's right. 3 sips a day is all you need. In 3 days, you will feel the difference. Balance 7 is my go-to drink to energize me every day. Stop taking those caffeinated, sugar-filled energy drinks. Balance 7. Works. Remember, a sick body is an acid body. So, cut the acid in your body with Balance 7. Go to Balance7.com or call 800-793-9039. Use the code word FRED to get $15 off your order and free shipping, plus a money-back guarantee. Man, you can't beat this. Call 800-793-9039. That's 800-793-9039. Or go to Balance7.com. And don't forget the code word FRED.
Do you want to fly somewhere, anywhere in the world? Smart travelers call MyFlightSearch.com for the best deals on flight tickets. Going to Manila, Bangkok, London, how about Singapore? Call MyFlightSearch.com for the lowest flight tickets available. What about a local vacation? Let's say you want to fly to Vegas, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, or Denver. Pick up the phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now. We have exclusive deals that you can't find anywhere else. The only way you can get these low airline prices is by calling us. We have so many low prices available, we can't possibly tell them to you right here and now. If you're flying somewhere anytime in the next 6 months and you want the lowest airline ticket prices anywhere, you owe it to yourself to save a ton of money. So pick up your cell phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now.
Call 800-445-3166. 800-445-3166. That's 800-445-3166. Call now. 800-445-3166.
Attention real estate investors. Do you need cash immediately? If you own one or multiple rental properties, you can use your equity to get cash out fast. The best part is we don't need tax returns or even a good credit score. At America's Loan Source, we are not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We make the decisions to loan you money and there's no limit how much we can give you. Some clients have gotten as much as $500,000 or more within days. Use the money any way you want. If you own one rental property or 100, and COVID has left you in a cash crunch, we can help you turn your equity into fast cash. Call now for details and close in as little as 10 days and get the cash you need. 800-353-1760. 800-353-1760. 800-353-1760. That's 800-353-1760.
Everybody's talking at me. Chuck Wilder, CRN, always a pleasure to have Judd Garrett, author of No Wind. And, you know, you mentioned that we need to get back to our physical responsibility. Free markets allow the true capitalist system, which made the United States the wealthiest nation in the world. I'm wondering, Judd, do you think we're still right there on the top, maybe just barely, or have we been surpassed by China, maybe the Ukraine? You know, with all that money going over the Ukraine, they might be catching up with us. Are we the most wealthiest world still?
I think we are still, but I think it's getting close to China overtaking us, and that's why we need to start doing things the right way. We got to put our financial house in order. We got to start treating China like the geopolitical threat they really are, as opposed to, I mean, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, all these Democrats, even Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, they're so tied up with China and they're making so much money from China that they're selling a lot of America to China. So we got to start treating them like the enemy they really are, and we can keep them at bay. But if we keep doing what we're doing, China will easily overtake us in the next 10 years.
And, you know, when you have the so-called leader of America, you know, Joe Biden, getting his residuals from China, since I don't think he's working with them like he was before, him and his son. But, you know, what was it, a four in the family that were receiving millions of dollars from China? And he's just saying, no, that never happened. And that's the end of that questionnaire. Man alive, you know. It's corruption. Corruption at its worst. And it should have never got this far. But, you know, and it's probably right now that there are fewer people that trust, you know, the CIA and the FBI and the Attorney General, you know, and all of this crazy stuff that's coming out. You know, let's arrest the Catholics because they have a rosary and they're going to kill everybody. You know, what in the world is going on? What is going on?
Well, I mean, and I alluded to this earlier, I mean, the problem is that the mainstream media does not hold these Democrats accountable. If Donald Trump or George Bush or any Republican did anything close to what, you know, Biden did in China and Ukraine, you know, New York Times would have run a front page story for months about it. And they don't say a word about it. They let Biden get away with all of this that they wouldn't let a Republican get away with. So he keeps doing it. And like you said, he can get away with saying, oh, that never happened, even though Hunter Biden's laptop has evidence proving that it happened. But again, the media doesn't follow up on it. The media doesn't investigate. They don't want to know. And it's willful ignorance. And that's why they're able to get away with all of it. And that's what's going to kill our country is the complicit media.
Yeah, and it makes you kind of wonder, you know, is the media really connected to China that much? I've heard that a couple of big networks are. And we know that sports are getting really involved with China, especially basketball, professional basketball. Big crowd over there, you know, love to watch basketball in China, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, hey, Judd, I certainly appreciate the visit today. Look forward to our next visit. And remember, listener, read all of the great editorials that Judd Garrett writes and stories. And it's objectivityistheobjective.com. Objectivityistheobjective.com. Thank you, sir. Look forward to the next visit.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Selwyn Duke is coming up next. CRN Digital Talk Radio, Chuck Wilder here with Suede at the network, and we just happen to be live across America and all around the world at crntalk.com. Right now, my privilege to welcome the one and only Selwyn Duke. He's a writer for The New American, and Selwyn has also contributed to college textbooks published by Gale Sinage Learning. He appears on television, frequent guest on many radio shows, and his website is SelwynDuke.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here comes the Duke.
Duke, 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 Duke of Earl, 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 Duke, 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 Duke of Earl, Duke, Duke, Duke of Earl.
Yes, the Duke, 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 the Duke of Earl. Yes. How are you, sir?
Chuck, I'm not bad. I just had an ice cream sundae, the breakfast of champions. I'm all ready to go. I've got all those sugars and saturated fats flowing, coursing through my bloodstream. How are you?
Hey, you got a sundae on a Friday?
I had a sundae on a Friday, absolutely.
Okay. I'm ahead of the game. Fair to partly cloudy. And I got to confess that I just now noticed that you snuck one in there that I didn't see that we'll talk about, and I'll probably hee-haw over it. Diversity is really diversitism. Is that what it is? Diversitism? V-D-I-V-E-R-S-I-T-Y-I-S-M. Can I buy another valve?
Yeah. Well, I originated that myself, so right
Did
now
you?
It's diversity-ism, but who knows? Maybe it'll be modified one of these days. We can work on that.
Another one of those, Selwyn Duke, I came up with that one. I'm going to tell you something, listener. Selwyn, you know, writes for The New American, okay? And he did an outstanding performance for them. I'm calling it a performance because I'm telling you, all the pages and all of this, and we're going to let Selwyn's go over this with the most important parts because I think I would probably delay it more than it should be delayed. The title, are you ready? Was Jesus a Socialist? Huh? And you say many socialists will claim Jesus as one of their own, but in an examination of his life and movement, this is to be fantasy. All right, well, we'll see. Selwyn, I read the whole thing, you know, so if you want to take a nap, I'll just, no, I will not. I'm okay, a lazy Chuck, guy so, sometimes, you know.
After reading the whole thing, where do you come out on this? Do you think Jesus was a socialist or not?
I think, hang on one second here. Let me find out the one. I probably put a comment here at the, yeah, I did. Here it is. Finally. It's only about 30 or 40 pages. I don't know. It's sometimes it's you know the flip of the coin, right?
Yep. Well,
did I take
it's
the
interesting.
Easy way out on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, you sure did. Very politician-like answer there.
Thank you,
but
sir.
Anyway,
unless you're contemplating not becoming a sir, you know. Yes.
So. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, this is a very long essay, 4,300 words. So I told you, Chuck, that I'd keep it short, just provide a summary. So how about this? Was Jesus a socialist? No. Can we leave
All
it
right.
there, or was that too concise?
No. I want you to get into it here.
Okay.
When you look at where you, subtitles, recruit Jesus, okay? You know, it says, yes, even many secularists believe that Christ can be a savior of socialism. Thus do we hear the claim, Jesus was a socialist, with the implication, do you want to be a heathen, you capitalist pig? No wonder you write for the New American. See, you know how to get their attention.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, Chuck, because actually people figure socialism has been around since the Communist Manifesto was published. That was 1848. But actually, it's been around for longer than that, and it's been failing for almost 200 years. In 1825 already, we had Robert Owen, the Scottish reformer, quote-unquote, who was basically a socialist, and he came here to this country and created a secular collectivist commune. But I'm going to get into that a little later on. And we have these people now who are pushing socialism. It has been gaining currency, unfortunately, especially with a lot of young people. And what they want to do to try to sell it is, A, they're rebranding it as democratic socialism, okay, where they actually say, I was quoting this professor from Occidental College, Peter Dreyer, he's a political science professor. He said, well, you have to understand, we Democrat socialists, we believe that enterprise should stay in private hands. We just want the government to make sure that business owners do the right thing. And I thought to myself, whoa, where'd this come from? It was never a tenet of socialism that industry would stay in private hands. But anyway, so now they want to recruit Jesus to make it more marketable. And I mentioned before to you, Chuck, that unfortunately, socialism is gaining currency, and here's one example. There were many polls taken on this. One was a 2019 report by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Well, you know what it found? It found that more than 70% of millennials said they were likely to vote for a socialist for president.
70?
More than 70%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd
That's
hear that.
Staggering.
Yeah.
That's staggering.
That's
and
stupidity.
That just tells you, yeah, that just tells you, one, the truth of what Hegel said, the philosopher. He said, we learn from history that people do not learn from history. That's the first thing. And also it tells you the power of branding, because you ask these young people, Chuck, they can't actually define socialism. They don't know what it is in general, but the word sounds good to them, because after all, everyone likes socializing. We like the sociable. We may belong to social clubs. So socialism just sounds so nice and so innocuous and so friendly, but that's not what it is at all. So anyway, let's move on from here. Now, by the way, when that Professor Dreyer said, we just want the government to make sure that business does the right thing, but we want business to stay in private hands, what is he describing in reality? Well, understand, when you talk about a situation like that, where the government is making all sorts of rules and basically is controlling these private businesses, that's known as corporatism. When you have this nexus, this strong nexus between big government and big business, but it's also, Chuck, called something else. Okay, and I'm going to quote here the founding father of fascism, Benito Mussolini. He reportedly said, quote, fascism should rightly be called corporatism because it is the merger of corporate and government power. So I bet all these people who are espousing this, I bet they never, ever thought of themselves as economic fascists. But anyway, okay, so I mentioned that socialism is being pushed. Well, one fellow, Chuck, who has been pushing it, at least somewhat, is Senator Raphael Warnock, that fellow down in Georgia who cheated his way into that seat there, that Senate seat. Mm-hmm. Well, he said, this was some years ago, before he was in politics, to his Ebenezer Baptist Church flock that evangelicals who stand on the Bible, unquote, but then dismiss socialism, should, quote, go back and read the Bible. Quote, the early church was a socialist church. That's what he said. And then he said, look, the early Christians, quote, took all of their things and they had all things in common. That's what he said. Now, if you know scripture, you know that actually he was quoting from Acts 32 to 35. And basically what that describes is the communal living that these early Christians were embracing and that they shared all things in common. Okay, does that sound socialist? It may to some people, but let's examine it. First of all, understand that that model has been replicated continually throughout history. Okay, we've always had monks living that way. In the 19th century, we had religious communes, many of them. Again,
let me ask you real quick, would Muslims fall into that category?
Well, if they're living in that fashion, in general, no, because most of them don't. But we had these religious communes in the 19th century, like the Shakers, the Oneida Colony, Brook Farm, the Latter-day Saints. There were so many of them. These were small groups. And then we have the family. Now, the family you could maybe describe as a, quote, socialist unit. Now, why do I say that, Chuck? Well, think about it. The family, the mother and father, well, they're the government. They're an autocracy. The kids don't normally, if it's proper family structure, get a vote, okay? And it's a nanny state. The kids who are tantamount to the people, all their needs are taken care of by the nanny state. And it is from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs. Now, that's okay because that's a family. That's the way it should be. The question is, though, is this scalable? Can you apply this to the wider society? Because to be socialism, it must be scalable. And the reason for that is that Karl Marx, Frederick Engels, all the rest, they never said, well, we think people should form communes and engage in this voluntarily. No. Their prescription is for all of society. So for it to be socialism, this must be scalable. Okay, but what's one of the first differences between those early Christians, their communal living, the communes that we've had, the family? Well, one difference is that all of these are voluntary arrangements, and that makes a huge, huge difference. You have small groups of people who are agreeing to come together and live in this communal fashion. And even so, because some may say, Chuck, we'll take the family. Wait a second. For the kids, it's not voluntary. I mean, until you're 18, you're there, and you've got to do what your parents say. But doesn't that illustrate the point? Think about how restive, Chuck, and rebellious kids can sometimes become, right? Because sometimes they don't like the laws of their little parental government, right? So what do we think is going to happen if you apply this to all of society? How restive and rebellious are people going to become? And we actually know because we've seen this all throughout history with the Soviet Union. We saw those protests in Hong Kong more recently. It just does not work very well when it's not voluntary. Okay. But let's move on here. That's one significant difference. But there's another one, perhaps the most profound one of all. Karl Marx said religion is the opium of the masses, right? Well, Vladimir Lenin, of course, the author of the Russian Revolution, he echoed that. He said, quote, there is nothing more abominable than religion. He said, Chuck, all worship of a divinity is a necrophilia. And then echoing Marx, he said, religion is a sort of spiritual booze. And he said about socialism, everyone must absolutely be free to be an atheist, which every socialist is as a rule. Okay? So think about the chutzpah of these people, these socialists. They want to claim Jesus, history's most famous religious figure, as one of their own when their own ideology is explicitly anti-religious. It's just absolutely unbelievable. So that alone tells you there that Jesus could not have been a socialist. Now, I know we're coming up on a break here because I want to move on, but that right there really tells the tale. But there is nonetheless more to say.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and I see one part here about where Professor Dreyer, which you mentioned a moment ago, and his Democratic Socialists, they get into the practice of religion. Very interesting. Should be a private matter. You know, and when I read that, I'm thinking, well, it seems to me like Biden's really sticking his nose in a lot of things religious these days, you know, like it's bad to be religious, especially some different organizations, I guess you would say. Selwyn Duke.
Yeah.
And what's that website? That website is selwynduke.com. We're discussing a lengthy piece that Selwyn did for The New American, and it is entitled, Was Jesus a Socialist? We shall return in just a moment.
For the getaway of your dreams, come to Hawaii's Playground, Ka'anapali Beach Resort, on the fun side of Maui, where the world comes to play. Find your spot on Ka'anapali Beach with 3 miles of white sand, 12 resort properties, 2 golf courses, and 2 shopping centers. Enjoy the playground of Hawaii's ancient royalty. Ka'anapali Beach Resort is Hawaii's original master planned destination resort and home of the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival. With views of 2 neighboring islands, you can breathe in the land's natural beauty from your favorite resort or golf fairway. Come experience Ka'anapali's own special brand of Hawaiian hospitality with world-class dining, relaxing resorts, water sports, and activities of every kind. For romantic, family, and great friend getaways, discover the options of Ka'anapali Beach Resort, where the world comes to play. Plan your getaway today. Visit KaanapaliResort.com. That's KaanapaliResort.com.
Are you ready to make a difference for the environment while helping the visually impaired at the same time? Then donate your vehicle to Heritage for the Blind today by calling 800-785-9618. Every donated vehicle will either be properly recycled in an eco-friendly manner or given a new life through reuse. Donating your vehicle is easy. Simply call 1-800-785-9618 and Heritage for the Blind will do the rest. They'll even arrange for your vehicle to be picked up at no cost to you. And for a limited time, when you donate your car, you'll receive a $200 restaurant voucher and a 2-night, 3-day hotel stay at one of 50 locations. Call 800-785-9618 right now to schedule your tax-deductible vehicle donation and make a positive impact on the environment while helping others. Heritage for the Blind, where every car donation counts and every person makes a difference. Call 1-800-785-9618 now.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past few years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage is only $75 per month, level for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco user can buy $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110. Guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rates for 20 years. And if you're a smoker, we have great rates for you as well. At the Term Lifeline, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. So if you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call right now for a free quote.
Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes are based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting exam required to qualify.
800-349-6855. 800-349-6855. 800-349-6855. That's 800-349-6855.
Everybody's talking at me.
CRN, Chuck Wilder, my guest, Selwyn Duke, writer for The New American, selwynduke.com, and discussing one of his latest that he wrote for The New American. Question, was Jesus a socialist? And Selwyn Duke, a great investigator, is going to let us know for sure in just a little bit here. Let you make up your own mind. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, I should have said at the outset, this is not something we should even have to discuss because I think the answer is obvious, but since socialists are trying to recruit Jesus, we must address it. So I was discussing how integral, needless to say, religion is to Christianity. Christianity and Jesus are all about religion, and of course, socialism is avowedly anti-religion. So I want to go back to those communes, those religious communes that I mentioned, because Senator Warnock had said, well, the early Christians were socialists, and I pointed out, well, that's not the case. But let's discuss another difference between these religious communes and the socialist model. Now, I mentioned Robert Owen instituted a collectivist secular commune here in 1825, okay? Now, the religious communes, Chuck, many of them actually were very successful. They existed for more than 100 years, some of them. Owen's commune dissolved after only 4 years in 1829. What was the difference? Okay. Well, neither model had the profit motive, okay? But the religious communes had a different motive. They had the God motive. And whatever you think of their theology, if you believe that God has enjoined you to be industrious or that maybe even you're working your way into heaven via good works, well, let's face it, Chuck, that's a pretty darn strong incentive. But Owen's secular collectivist commune had neither the profit motive nor the God motive, so there was no incentive at all. So what happened? Well, you can read this if you read about it online. You don't have to take my word for it. The commune attracted layabouts, lazy people. The productive realized they weren't going to get any more benefits, any more resources if they worked hard. So they stopped working. Food production started to wane. And that was it. Like I said, it was already teetering in 1827. In 1829, it dissolved. So it couldn't even work on that small scale. Why would we think that you could apply it to the whole society and it could somehow work? It can't, and it never has, obviously. But again, I'm emphasizing how religion is integral to what we're talking about here, to Jesus and his followers, and obviously it's antithetical to socialism. All right, but let's move on, because largely now I've been discussing Jesus's followers, not Jesus himself all that much. And someone could say, okay, maybe though his followers really weren't reflecting his will. All right, well, this Professor Dreyer I mentioned, he tried to make his case that Jesus was a socialist, but he could only, out of the whole Bible, find two quotations that he thought buttressed his case. One is this. Matthew 6:24, it says, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Dreyer quoted that. Well, of course, this is, for one thing, a straw man argument, Chuck, because the supposition here is that supporting a healthy market economy is somehow synonymous with serving money. I mean, you could turn that around and you could say that, well, then supporting socialism is synonymous with worshiping big government. And again, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and big government both. Mm-hmm. And actually, that is a more relevant point, because the truth is big government always does try to put itself in the place of God. But anyway, we have to understand, what was the context of Jesus' saying? Well, he said that in Matthew 6:24 within the context of a sermon, Chuck, in which he also instructed his followers not to worry about their bodies, about food, drink, clothes. In fact, Jesus' very next line was, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life." Okay, well, following Dreyer's logic, applying it to this, should we take this as an injunction against providing health care? Okay, and also, we know that socialists, they fixate on food and drink and clothes and health care, and they claim that their system can deliver necessities better than market economies can. So should Jesus' words here then be considered anti-socialist?
Wow. Yeah.
Well,
and you're almost through with it, you know. I think what we'll do is take that break, and we'll come back and get the final conclusion, which is not going to be too hard to reach, I don't think, but we'll see. Peter Schweitzer, I see him mentioned here too, demonstrating leftist COVID money more than do conservatives. Well, isn't that weird? Maybe they're stealing the money. That's why they covet it more than we do, Selwyn. Selwyn Duke, writer for The New American. And the website is Selwyn Duke, S-E-L-W-Y-N, Duke, D-U-K-E, .com.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin have been working together successfully for more than 40 years. And in their latest dark comedy, they play aging college classmates who meet at the funeral of another best friend, with Fonda determined to get revenge on the grieving widower for an ancient wrong. That's the intriguing setup of Moving On, now playing in select theaters.
Howard, I'm gonna kill you.
What's the plan, Scarface?
Do you have any poison?
I have a cyanide pill. In case I'm captured by the enemy, you can have it.
That enemy is played by another veteran, Malcolm McDowell, who is effectively dislikable. And the other characters are surprisingly complex and convincing, despite their sometimes silly, murderous intentions. The movie's conclusion is a groan-inducing cop-out, but for most of its running time, Moving On moves along at a well-paced and stylish clip. Rated R for mostly sexual details discussed rather than shown. 2.5 stars for Moving On.
What are you so happy about?
I'm on the pill.
Aren't you two a bit old to worry about having more kids?
Not her, me.
You lost me there, buddy.
Steel Man pills. Things weren't always looking up, if you catch my drift. So, my doctor prescribed me a little something.
Like Viagra?
Yeah, but that's expensive, and it wasn't covered by my insurance. Steel Man pills cost me less than $3 a pill, and virtually the same effect. I just called and got over 40 pills for only $99.
I have this friend who might be looking, and...
Well, if your friend wants some help, the consultation is free over the phone. No clinic. Steel Man pills sends it in the mail in a confidential package.
I'm on it. I mean, my friend will be on it.
Steel Man Pills, going the extra mile to help men with erectile dysfunction.
800-605-1683. 800-605-1683. 800-605-1683. That's 800-605-1683.
For the getaway of your dreams, come to Hawaii's Playground, Ka'anapali Beach Resort, on the fun side of Maui, where the world comes to play. Find your spot on Ka'anapali Beach with 3 miles of white sand, 12 resort properties, 2 golf courses, and 2 shopping centers. Enjoy the playground of Hawaii's ancient royalty. Ka'anapali Beach Resort is Hawaii's original master planned destination resort and home of the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival. With views of 2 neighboring islands, you can breathe in the land's natural beauty from your favorite resort or golf fairway. Come experience Kaanapali's own special brand of Hawaiian hospitality with world-class dining, relaxing resorts, water sports, and activities of every kind. For romantic, family, and great friend getaways, discover the options of Kaanapali Beach Resort, where the world comes to play. Plan your getaway today. Visit KaanapaliResort.com. That's K-A-A-N-A-P-A-L-I Resort.com.
The smartest way for you to get the lowest prices on your plane tickets, domestic or international, is to call SmartFares, first or last, but you've got to call us before you book your plane tickets. Fly anywhere in the world, fly anywhere in the U.S., and SmartFares can save you up to 75% on your plane tickets. We have the lowest airline ticket prices on over 500 airlines, and you've got a great 12-hour free cancellation window. Plus, with our live agent help, you can always get fast help and fast answers. So on your next trip, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, how about right now? Pick up your phone and call SmartFares. Plus, save up to 75% on your plane reservation. So call right now. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644. 800-915-2644.
Everybody's talking at me. CRN, Chuck Wilder with Selwyn Duke, writer for The New American. We are discussing an article that he wrote for The New American. Was Jesus a socialist? And you know, Selwyn, during the break there, I was thinking, I wonder, you know, if certain students, college students, would run across this and copy it down, and what's that word, plagiarism? Is that the right word? Steal this
yep,
from
that's
you?
That's it.
Yeah, they'd get an A+, you know?
Well, not if it was a typical left-wing professor, right? But I certainly wish college students would read this instead of just watching videos or playing around on social media. But anyway, Chuck, let's move on here. I was talking about what Jesus actually said, and this professor, Peter Dreyer from Occidental, who was making his case that Jesus was a socialist. And like I said, Dreyer quoted two Jesus quotations supposedly to that effect. Okay, now the first one we already addressed. Here's the second one. Jesus said in Luke 12:15, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Okay, so Dreyer quoted that, and boy, he's got us there, right? But yeah. Here's the funny thing. The context here is deliciously ironic. Do you know who Jesus said that to? Jesus made that statement while rebuking a man who came to him and said, "Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me." In other words, what was Jesus doing? He was issuing this warning to a man who was asking for equal treatment and wealth redistribution. So not only that, if you look at traditional interpretations of Luke 12:15, usually they don't use the word greed, but covetousness. And this is relevant because covetousness is something that drives socialism. That's why Winston Churchill called socialism, quote, "the philosophy of envy." So anyway, I'm going to wrap this up.
Well, before but, we wrap it up here, do you have the next one there, John 2:16? And this, men, please pay attention to this one, all right, because this is very important. I never knew this. I thought it had to be the actual act, but apparently it isn't. You have that in front of you there? Jesus warned against
lust. Yeah, I'm sure I do.
Yeah, Matthew 5:28. Go ahead.
Matthew 5:28. Okay. So, anyway, are you talking about the one?
Let's see here. John 2:16. Here it is. The former of which reads.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's my mistake. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already, what? Tell me, Selwyn.
Yeah, committed adultery with her in his heart. And what I said was that, well, following Dreyer's logic, should we say that this implies that Christ was advocating a top-down, command-and-control, government-orchestrated system for monitoring and micromanaging and redistributing the pleasures of the flesh? I mean, none of this makes any sense. What Christ was doing was he was instructing us on how to voluntarily live a moral, a virtuous life. That's what he was doing, okay? And by the way, I want to mention something else because this occurred to me when I was pondering this. I was thinking, well, there are two stories here that also tell the tale, and as far as I know, no one has ever pointed this out. And they are the stories of the young man who came to Jesus in Matthew 19, 16 to 30, okay, and also the story of Zacchaeus. Now, the young man who came to Jesus, this rich young fellow in Matthew, he basically said to Jesus, well, Master, I'm following all the commandments, I'm living a good life, what else do I need to do? And Jesus basically said to him, well, if you would be perfect, give away all you have to the poor and follow me. And the young man walked away crestfallen because obviously he was attached to his wealth and he didn't want to do that. Okay, but on the other hand, Jesus treated Zacchaeus, the tax collector, in Luke 19, 1 to 10, very differently. Okay, Zacchaeus was looking down on Jesus from a tree, and Jesus actually said, Zacchaeus, come down, I want to stay at your house. And Zacchaeus was so taken by this, supposedly he was transformed, and he said, well, I'm going to give away half of what I have to the poor, and if I have cheated anyone, I'll compensate him fourfold. And Jesus was happy with this. Now, understand the difference, though. Jesus was asking that young man to become penniless, but he was still allowing Zacchaeus to retain a good portion of his fortune. Now, what does that tell you? What this tells you is that people have different roles in society, and that also in society they're supposed to have different bank roles too, okay? This was not at all the socialist model. No, this was understanding people are different. Maybe Jesus was calling that young wealthy man to follow him and become a priest. Maybe that was that man's role. Maybe Jesus also understood, because he could read hearts and minds, that this young man was inordinately attached to his wealth. So maybe he realized that the young man had to detach. Maybe with Zacchaeus that wasn't the case. Okay, so anyway, that more or less wraps it up, but I'll also mention that this Professor Dreyer, when he was making his case that Jesus is a socialist, he mentioned Christian figures who were sympathetic to socialism or who he thought were sympathetic to socialism, such as Pope Francis, okay? Now, I point out a lot relating to this in my article, but actually what should be understood here is that the Catholic Church actually has explicitly condemned socialism. Pope Pius XI said, I'm paraphrasing now, actually, no, I don't have to, I've got it here. He said in an encyclical, quote, religious socialism, Christian socialism are contradictory terms. No one can be at the same time a good Catholic and a true socialist, okay? Now, I want people to understand something, how the Catholic Church operates. An encyclical is not just a teaching document, it's the highest teaching document. When something is stated in an encyclical definitively, that is definitive teaching. That's not like Pope Francis going around and talking to reporters, by the way, which he does way too much because he loves to talk. That doesn't mean anything. That's not Catholic teaching. That's just like when a politician goes off and talks to a reporter about how he thinks things should be. That's not law, okay? An encyclical, though, essentially can create, quote, Catholic law. So anyway, just to conclude, you know, I point out in my essay, Chuck, that even left-wing Current Affairs magazine, which was criticizing someone I had quoted, criticizing a book stating, was Jesus a socialist, and concluded that he wasn't, even that left-wing magazine admitted in 2020 Jesus was not a socialist. But what is the real point? Well, the magazine also said, well, Jesus certainly wasn't a libertarian. And you know what my answer is? No, he wasn't. Jesus was not a socialist. He was not a capitalist. He was not a libertarian. Don't apply these labels to him. It's very important. As C.S. Lewis pointed out in his book, The Screwtape Letters, in 1942, it's important that we not attach worldly labels to Jesus. That's what evil wants us to do. Evil, I'm paraphrasing Lewis now, wants us to call Jesus the first communist or the first liberal or the first this or that, as long as we don't first and foremost think of him as God. Even if you're not a Christian, if you have any depth at all, you understand that Jesus' message transcended the worldly. It was not about the worldly. So no, he wasn't any of these things. He was Jesus, and that's it. And I concluded my article by writing, you know, Jesus also counseled in Matthew 6, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Well, you know what? He was speaking, Chuck, of more than just monetary wealth, because where, quote, your treasure is, your heart will also there be, Jesus said, okay? And understand, our treasure can be anything. I'm quoting my article, from pocketbook to power to politics to party to privilege and beyond. Just as some people would kill for money, leaders have murdered millions for power in power's name, okay? Well, greed is only one of many sins, and Christ's business was all of them. And that's the truth. And you socialists, if you don't get that, well, when he said that, where your treasure is, your heart will be also, he was talking to you. And if you want to make the world a better place, you socialists, and this goes for all of us, you know what? Then look in the mirror and start with the things you already govern, your heart and mind. As Jesus said, take the log out of your own eye before you worry about the speck in your brother's, and also before you worry about the speck in your nation's economic system.
Yeah. You know, and I wanted to go back one page because, you know, it's anytime election is coming up, you know how the politicians are start begging for money. And in this, you you talk about the late journalist P.J. O'Rourke speaking of merit, right? He said, there is no virtue in compulsory government charity, and there is no virtue in abdicating it. He once wrote, a politician who portrays himself as caring and sensitive because he wants to expand the government's charitable programs is merely saying that, here it is, he's willing to try to do good with other people's money. And then it says, well, who isn't? And a voter who takes pride in supporting such programs is telling us that he'll be do good with his own money if a gun is held to his head. So even if you believe government aid is sometimes necessary, supporting it is nothing to brag about, you know? And a lot of people do that. They do. Oh, yes, I gave to him. Boy, that's the reason he got in there and all that. I'm going to tell you, it's very interesting reading. It's quite long, reader, but it is available at the New American magazine, right?
Right, right. Well, understand it's long because it's a cover story in the actual physical magazine. That's why, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, this radio program, we're always looking for, oh, all right, here's a short one. This is good. Here's another short one. This is good. But I'm telling you, you know, when I picked this one up, took two hands, was Jesus a socialist? It automatically gets your attention, doesn't it? Yes. You have a brand new one, Diversity is diverse is, what is that, Sisitism?
Diversityism.
Diversityism, yeah. Oh, and means conformative of thought, yes. Well, I thought about it, and I just ran across it today, and we can do that one. Or we can do a secession fantasible. Is it already underway, says some professor. Okay. What was the other one? Yes, this one. Ben Stein is right, sort of. Black Americans have never had it so good. Do you happen to have that handy there? Because I think we might get that one in.
Sure,
and it's... The title grabs hold
of you. Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
Yeah, let's do that. Well,
go ahead.
Ben Stein, if people know who he is, he was a successful actor. He was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and he always had that monotone delivery. Well, anyway, he's a very intelligent man, and he's a conservative. He's not your typical Hollywood type. He said recently that we've made tremendous progress in the United States, and that contrary to all this BLM nonsense, that narrative, Black Americans, quote, have never had it so good. Well, this caused an uproar. One website actually called what he did a racist rant. And if you watched him, though, he was just sitting there in his usual very calm style, rendering his opinions. But actually, it's interesting because this reminds me, and I mentioned this on your show last week, of something G.K. Chesterton said, the philosopher. He said the worst aspect of duels wasn't that someone might die, as bad as that is, but that They settled nothing about who was right or wrong. And this is similar because, you know, Stein, I don't know if he cares, he's 78 years old now, but he might become a cancel culture casualty. He might suffer reputational and career death, but the real issue will not have been settled. Was he correct or not? Well, guess what? He was, and it's indisputable. The pseudo-elites, though, Chuck, don't want us to know that because that would debunk their BLM narrative. Okay, but let's start with broader perspective. Now, I've said this before. I'm going to say it 10,000 more times if I have to. As even left-wing Think Progress admitted in 2013, that's a website, the standard of living worldwide back then was the highest it had ever been in human history, okay? And the United States here, well, we're one of the world leaders in lifestyle, okay? And that means that materially, we're living a relative life of Riley, okay? Now, understand when I say this, that man's historical default has been grinding poverty. I think most everyone knows that. I mean, for most of history, people lived without all our luxuries, right? And even with luxuries that we often consider necessities, and sometimes even necessities were in short supply. They didn't have indoor plumbing or other kind of plumbing. They didn't have toilets or refrigeration or modern transportation, Chuck. They didn't have effective medical care. They didn't have insurance policies or a safety net of any kind, okay? They might have to work sunrise till sunset just to eke out a subsistence living, okay? And privation was the order of the day. Listen to this. Spartan boys in their military camps were going back thousands of years. They were put in those camps when they were 7 years old, by the way, okay? They had to live off blood soup, which might not have been too bad, actually, but they were hungry all the time, we understand. And lives for most of history, Chuck, they were hard, they were brutal, they were short, okay? I read once that the average lifespan in the Roman Empire was 22. Now, that's probably not exactly accurate, but the bottom line is we know that our average of 76.4 was unheard of for most of history, okay? And I know we're coming up on a break here, but again, the U.S., even in this very rich world that we live in, is among the best places to be, like I said before. I mean, consider this statistic. The poorest, Chuck, 10% of Americans live better than about 70% of the world. Okay? And I think I'll leave it there because we're coming up on a break, right?
Yes, we are. And then, of course, Walter E. Williams had something to say about this, too. So we're going to be right back, and we'll wrap up. Ben Stein is right, sort of. Black Americans have never had it so good, so good. Oh, that's a song, isn't it? Yes, all right. Selwyn Duke, and it's selwynduke.com. Be right back. SELWYNDUKE.com.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. That's 800-378-3212.
You're experiencing pain? Back pain, shoulder, elbow, or hand pain? Pain from a sports injury? If so, schedule a visit with Dr. Michael Sheps, the leading expert in laser therapy for pain management. Call 310-873-4422 or go to drsheps.com. Experience Epic T, the breakthrough laser therapy system that Dr. Sheps developed to make you pain-free in less time. Laser therapy is a non-invasive, safe, and effective in-office procedure that penetrates deep into your skin without damaging the tissue. It perfectly targets areas of pain to promote fast, natural healing. Relax your muscles, ease muscle spasms, joint stiffness, and arthritis pain while increasing blood circulation. For over 25 years, Dr. Sheps has helped Olympic athletes and sports enthusiasts alike get back in the game. Schedule your visit with Dr. Sheps at his Brentwood office in California. Call 310-873-4422 or visit drsheps.com. That's drsheps.com, 310-873-4422.
Let's talk about your credit cards. When you first start using them, it's a slow drip. You make charges, then more charges, then bills come, and they keep coming. When you open your statements, the floodgates come pouring in. You realize you have more credit card debt than you can afford, and you're barely making the minimum payments. Wouldn't it be nice to make one affordable payment and have all your credit card bills covered? Make this free call and learn our responsible way to get your credit card bills paid and under control.
Sponsored by Consumer Education Services, a nonprofit organization.
800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. 800-876-3643. That's 800-876-3643.
CESI is not a loan company. The establishment of a debt management plan may adversely affect your credit rating. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase finance and other charges to undertake collection activity, including liquidation.
Everybody's talking at me.
CRN, Chuck Wilder with Selwyn Duke, writer for The New American, and discussing this one, Ben Stein is right, sort of. Black Americans have never had it so good. And you know, Selwyn, you know, just that title, you can imagine, you know, what are you talking about? What about slavery? And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then you get here and it says, Black Americans should, as all I might have been, at least grudgingly thankful for slavery. And you go, what? What are you talking about? And I'm telling you, this is an excellent article and it makes so much sense. Because why? Yeah. Why should they be thankful for slavery?
Okay, well, basically what Ali said, Muhammad Ali, this was after his Rumble in the Jungle fight in 1974 in Zaire. He was asked what his impressions of Africa were, and he said, thank God my granddaddy got on that boat. That's what he said. And what he was saying was, okay, for whatever reason why we're here, we have to be happy that we're here and that we're not languishing in slums in Africa or South America or Eastern Europe or Asia, okay? Because it doesn't matter who you are. If you're in the United States, you have hit the jackpot. And I also pointed out, and some people roll their eyes at this, but it's absolutely true, the whole thing is a ridiculous argument because not only if there weren't slavery would American blacks not be here, not only would they perhaps be in Africa, where, of course, the lifestyle is very, very terrible. There's rampant poverty. But the truth is most of them wouldn't even exist because either their great-grandparents wouldn't have met or their grandparents wouldn't have met. So they never would have been. And that's the truth. That's how it works. If you change one little aspect of the past, it could have ended up changing the present in a tremendous, profound way. But, you know, I just wanted to point out now, backing up a little bit, talking about how good we all have it here. Dr. Walter Williams, who, if it matters to people, was a black economics professor, he pointed out that if you totaled up the earnings and spending of black Americans and considered us as a separate nation, I'm quoting him now, with our own gross domestic product, we would rank well within the top 20 richest nations, unquote, in the world. So I just have a question for all these people who are angry at Ben Stein and who are claiming, oh, well, it's ridiculous to say that black Americans have never had it better. If Stein is wrong, tell me when and where black Americans did have it better. Where would they rather have lived? somewhere in Africa at some point in history, or South America, or Asia, or Eastern Europe, or Western Europe? Where? Where? And if they can't answer that question, okay, then what it illustrates is that they're governed by nothing but prejudice. And that is the bottom line. It's nothing but prejudice. We all should be happy that we're here, because living today here in America, even though we're declining morally, is, again, materially speaking, like hitting the jackpot. Materially, we have nothing to complain about, although the left does want to change that.
And then you say, don't be surprised if you now hear crickets when liberals call someone a racist. It usually means they're out of arguments. Woo!
That's
another,
right.
Another fantastic one from the one and only Mr. Selwyn Duke. I appreciate it very much, sir, and look forward to our visit next week.
Thank you, Chuck. Same here. God bless.
All right. God bless you. SelwynDuke.com. SelwynDuke.com. Thank you, Sway. Thank you for listening. And God bless the United States of America. All of you.